agree. And it's the water board in particular is one of the older boards, aside from like planning commission and things like that. And so that's why there's a lot of vested powers in that particular group. This is, of course, random. So I think that that would be a fair statement.
Yeah. And I think the water board really, and we could ask Manager Adams to give us a reason why the water board has so much power. So speak up if I'm wrong. But the reason that the water board has so much power is because the city and council has always vested the water board with the right to go out and buy water rights on a moment's notice whenever the price was right, really, is what it really boils down to. The price was right, the need was right, the moment was right. And those things can't be sent back through two or three city council meetings and big public meetings. So I think that's where a lot of those vested rights came from.
They're
correct?
All highly technical, too.
You needed the right to make quick decisions?
Yeah, they don't quite have that authority as the IUC. What they have is the authority to set the price of cash and loot.
Oh, okay.
So that they have that authority. And then council has given them the full authority that they have for approving contracts, as long as they are in the budget, and also the authority to approve change orders. No other board or commission has those authorities. And then also the authority to work on water supply and those kind of things. So they could be going out, and in the budget every year, as a matter of fact, is CBT purchases a line item in our budget. So that's their recommendation at the time. So it's kind of like purchasing. And then also because of that, that's the idea of matching what the developer's giving for development as far as water, different kinds of water and how that works. So that is a lot of authority. There is 145 years of board experience if you add them all up on the board right now.
Mm-hmm.
So that board has a lot of, been there a long time. Some of those board members have been there since 1982.
Some of them are really old.
I didn't want to say that. I'm getting myself in trouble.
Hey.
Experienced.
Okay. Yeah, experienced. Yeah, there you go.
I'm a car dealer. They're high mileage.
It goes back to the fact that water is an incredibly valuable resource, right? And I think as we're talking about net neutrality, we might already be living in a world where data is as valuable, if not maybe even more valuable. Sounds kind of crazy to say. But I would love to revisit this conversation as time passes. And I think it almost be, I mean, if we're talking about the availability of data in general and prioritization of data reaching and coming from customers, you know, we heard recently about DMVs apparently selling user data. There might be hundreds of possible ways that the city could benefit from transacting on this data in the future. I don't want to say I would be in support of any of those things. Net neutrality and Xfinity's stance on net neutrality is one of the reasons I wanted to join this board. But I think remaining as open as possible and trying to discuss things as openly as possible and bringing those discussions perhaps to council semi-regularly, long term, I could see a staff position dedicated directly to the preservation of the town's, or at least the citizens' data and the way it interacts with the outside world. I don't know that we're too far from that becoming a necessity in some way, but maybe that's on pace.
And Connections has a separate policy for privacy of data, just net neutrality,
yeah.
So I think that can be a topic that needs its own, you know, gets its own as well.
Yeah, encryption was not for, yeah, that was not.
No, and you know, there are different types of user data. So there's their personal information, which is, that's pretty clear. That's pretty obvious that they'd be sharing personal information. However, there's a lot of other information that even in aggregated form could be of value, could be monetized. We may not want to, we may want to. There's things that we may want to do over time as the world changes around us too. So that's true, not tying our hands too much, but also making sure that we're also being very careful and good stewards.
Education and advocacy, I think, are the two biggest pieces of that. What does give me a little bit of hope for the future of this is that we are not at the end of the day interested in anything more than the citizens' well-being and access to information.
Right.
I think as long as that remains number one, we won't run into the kind of shenanigans that Xfinity has been pulling. I was just going to say, from what I understand, this is mostly like a passive thing. You know, Xfinity isn't interfering with the customers so much as they are the service providers like Netflix, like AT&T, insofar as they have entertainment delivery capabilities. They're charging those providers more to give stable access to their consumers. So the consumers are feeling it, but as long as we don't have our foot on any kind of connection, this almost isn't an issue for us, I feel like.
Did staff have a recommended policy written up?
No, we did not. We have, obviously we've reviewed what others have done. Fort Collins is by far the most comprehensive. A lot of other places have not taken quite as comprehensive of a stance or have stated stated ways that they're going to do things, but it's just a policy statement or a staff statement. So I think we had initially thought that maybe we would go down the road of code, but we thought it would be better if we asked direction.
So whether it's in code or and or terms and conditions, that sort of thing, I also promote that that's not where it stops. You know, the concept of an FAQ or one sheet like Fort Collins has, so that it's very findable and understandable to the customer without having to dig, I think is part of the transparency thing. So,
sure.
And I would say there's a few terminology things that as you go to craft this, maybe some make it in, some make it out, because I know we want to make sure we don't lock ourselves into too much. But certain things like no throttling, no preferences based on provider, source, those sort of things, like then we're not getting into content types and that sort of thing. So maybe there's some terms that if you do start to name things, you leave the other parts open for it.
The Fort Collins one is pretty well done.
It is. They did this early on in their process. I think it was when they were first launching over a year and a half ago now that they took this stance. So
you just copy it and then you own donuts or what?
Yeah, generally speaking. Or a beer, either way, right? There's
bagels.
Lots of breweries up there.
They
have Peace, Love, and Little Donuts up there too. It's very nice.
Spending lots of time reinventing the wheel when the one that you see in front of you works pretty well.
Yeah.
It seems like a large endeavor.
Well, and I think that's a valid point for the number of cooperative agreements we've already got with Fort Collins along the line. Presumably also Estes and Black Powers. Let's try to be balanced and consistent with what's already in place. And I think that'll just help us keep moving forward in a coordinated parallel fashion.
And I think that's easy to sell from a council standpoint too, if there's any questions, because we're just we're partnering with them, we're just all trying to row the boat in the same direction.
So what was the consensus that I heard? Did you hear consensus?
No.
I didn't hear. I heard it go both ways. So benefit of I heard a lot more in the terms than I heard probably in code as part of the term sheet. That's what I think I heard the most of, but I'm not 100% sure that I heard that.
Summarize everything you've collected as far as pros and cons between the two?
So.
Or is there anything else that we want to know?
Not really.
Would there be any harm in waiting a month or giving it like this at the beginning?
No, we're just plugging away at it. We thought that this would be a good topic for this meeting. If we need to talk about it more, we certainly can, and we can certainly revisit it. We've talked about it a couple of times in the past, but we've asked to table it and bring it back at a future date, and felt that this was a good opportunity to have those discussions.
Maybe if there's been enough discussion that you can draft something, maybe once we're seeing an actual draft, it may speak as code or it may speak as not code.
They're going to draft very, very differently if we put them in one place versus the other.
That's what you're saying. Yeah.
Code is super legalese.
I have one question, which is terms versus code. How easy is it to change terms? Is there a statement that says we can change them at any time?
Well, right now the plan is to have the terms and conditions referenced in code, and that can be changed to some extent administratively.
To a large extent administratively. I think that's the key question. That's a very good question. It is easy to change. Terms and conditions, right? Like conceptually, we have not adopted anything in code yet. There is no, we're standing up the entity, but the model that is being considered is there will be code language that council adopts and only council can amend. And then there will be terms and conditions, which will be administratively changeable. And that is people who are on staff who are changing that language as they see fit.
So I guess from my perspective, when I think about, you know, the blocking, the throttling, the prioritizing, I put myself in the place of a consumer. If I go to any given, you know, big player out there as my ISP, and they say, our terms say we're not going to do this to you, I go, great. And then tomorrow they go, well, you know what, we changed our mind, we are going to do this to you. What I see as the potential benefit here is for us to really say, this is a value to us, we're not going to do this. And we're not going to change it tomorrow, and we're not going to change it next week. And that's a benefit to you coming to us, because we put this in, we codified this as hard as we could in stone, so that you can take that to the bank as opposed to...
See, that's where that middle ground that I was asking really was going with this. If this is something that this board fully supports, and makes a recommendation to City Council that this be in code, and not staff, but this commit, because staff does not report to City Council, we report to City Council. If we then make a recommendation to change this, it's sort of in between, and not get blanket authority to do anything, but to sort of bridge the two extremes. I don't feel strongly about it, but I'm just trying to explain where I was coming from.
If it is in code, then City Council would have to then later change the code. Correct?
Right.
So if they would want to change a code and we express a desire for them not to change the code, that's information that's available to the public for the council meetings, correct?
Correct.
It's a bigger deal to change the code than it would be to change an administrative message.
And it would be... there would have to be some political capital spent if you were trying to change the composition of what your own board...
And it would take two meetings to do it, which is one of the key differences.
The one difference between our terms and conditions and Comcast or CenturyLink or any of the other providers out there is that, you know, we do still report through to the community at large, because that is our owners, and so these will still be posted, and they will still be publicly available, and they will still, you know, be notified that, you know, they will go through a notification if they get the change through the proper processes. So it's not like they're just going to change on a whim. They would, the most likely reason they would change is if there was some sort of political change or need, and I don't know that there is. I don't know that we have a strong opinion either way. We can work with it either way. I know that City of Fort Collins felt very strongly, and so that's why they put it into code. Longmont just has it as a policy statement, so they feel very comfortable that they're going to offer that service, and they have not changed that since they started offering those services 5 years ago, even with the political changes at the national level. So, I mean, the likelihood that this would change very quickly is not high. So, and it will still be referenced in code as terms and conditions. So it's still part of that bigger package. But there is, I think it's more of a statement about where we put the value. Do we put the value in code? Is it that strong of a statement? Or do we feel comfortable that this is how we operate and it's okay to be in terms and conditions? And I don't know that it's a bad thing either way to our public, because we are going to make a statement either way and it will be publicly available. So we still accomplish the same goal at the end of the day with either.
I mean, does it make any sense to just expand that reference in the code to the terms and conditions to specify whatever our broad stance is? In better language, no fast lanes, no slow lanes, asterisks, first responders, whatever it might be. And then just have the broader terms and conditions spell out exactly what that means. That way, if staff feels it's necessary to change it, maybe there could be an informal agreement or something to bring that discussion to the board at least. We have the oversight that sounds like you want, Rich, and I think it makes a lot of sense without making a council vote.
You know, as has been pointed out a couple times in our meetings, some... not the youngest guy here, and I'm not going to be on this board probably as long as some of you guys are, and change is going to happen, and I just want to make sure that whatever we implement is something that this board can live with, okay?
Because things will change, I guarantee it. We've all seen the internet change in 30 years, okay, dramatically. We wouldn't have ever, a lot of people wouldn't have ever guessed we'd be having a discussion about this, okay?
I don't think I'd codify technical terms or technical descriptions. I would leave that to the document and just reference it like Brianna said, so that the board and staff can change it, because, you know, there may be new things down the pike and they may come tomorrow afternoon for all we know. The one reason for getting this out of the way, I'll jump ahead with some of my report stuff because it's kind of important here, is that with Congress and the Senate coming back into their sessions very soon, it's going to be important to realize that House Bill 530, which I've told you about, and this is on the wireless side, for wireless side plate, cellular tower placement stuff, it has now 53 sponsors in the Congress. Senate Bill 2012, which was just coined, is the companion Senate bill, which is much broader in basically slapping down the FCC on the overreach that everybody feels that they did by giving away the cities, you know, the municipalities, the cities, the counties, giving away everybody's right-of-ways. So, and that only has about 7 sponsors currently because it's brand new. But my point in bringing those up, and they will be coming up, is that those are going to reignite all these discussions, okay? Because like anything that happens in Washington, D.C., you might be talking about X, but by the time you're done, you're talking about the whole alphabet. And just heads up, timing-wise.
So I think I heard that it makes sense to put something in code, and that it's, you know, in a general sense, that we're going to be transparent, we're going to be fair, and that the details of such can be outlined in the terms and services. Now, whether or not we put that in the code or we just do it in the terms and services, either way, we'll still have it in there. But is that, did I get that?
Is that so general? Sorry, like our intent goes in the code.
Yes.
The details go in that terms.
Yeah. Or just policy documents in general that will be.
Yes.
Transparency and no unwarranted favoritism are the two big ones I can think of. I don't know if there's
or
I think that's consistent with what we thought might go down, so it's good to know. I don't know what you guys are up to.
Well, let's tell them, if we're going to copy their document, let's use our picture this time.
It's going to be a little bit before we have a comprehensive document to really bring forward, but we wanted to make sure that as we're working through these items that we have enough to go on as we start to develop that.
So, Brianna, a question comes back to, again, the difference between staff council and a citizen advisory group meets once a month. Are you going to put the throttle down and start driving, and we're not going to be able to keep up? Will our frequency of gathering as the LCAB, slow you down from getting things accomplished?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, if we need to have something happen in between a meeting, we can always do that electronically. We've established that precedent with other boards and commissions if there was something that came up. But otherwise, I mean, we've done a lot of preparation, and I feel very confident in that we've had a lot of conversations over the last year and plus on this board and the task force prior to that, and lots and lots of conversations with city council. So we have a lot of good, solid background about how staff, you know, where we are supposed to be headed. And we have that goal post in front of us.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I look at it from a time management, project management aspect that, you know, you and your team are doing 40 hours a week. City council is meeting 4 times a month. Mm-hmm. We show up once a month. And so, you know, that's a big moving object, slightly smaller moving object, and then we go, on one Wednesday night. And I want us to be able to stay fully engaged, but you know, I don't want something that's ready to roll to a city council meeting on a fourth Tuesday, and we're not available until 2 weeks later, and then
we've had that conversation. The flow chart starts to lag,
and you know, I just wonder about that particular effectiveness cycle.
If we ever ran into a problem where we needed to take, say, a contract early, we would go to council and we would inform after the fact. I mean, that would not be ideal, of course, because we would prefer to have that discussion here. But I mean, that's always the option. That's the option with LUC as well. That if there's something that needs to go faster than LUC meets and it can't be done electronically, then it just goes to council. Hopefully, that's helpful.
Okay. All right. Since we're framing this as a consensus, I want to make sure that there's no one who feels out of step with what we've discussed at the end here. Okay. Is it helpful to vote on it? Is that formality?
No.
Paul, let's bring into the idea of a vote and amendments, which we've actually got solid documents in front of us. And right now, I think we're well served to take a close look at anything staff drafts based on what we've said here this afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, then I think we're ready to move on to staff reports, which is an update on the IGA report, Collins and Estes.
Yeah, we just wanted to give you guys a quick update about what's going on with our partnership. So we brought forward an IGA several months ago now for our transport and long haul. That was passed by City Council, so we are sharing our upstream connectivity out from Fort Collins and Estes Park. We did that because there were some time constraints with needing to have Fort Collins and Estes actually connecting out to the wider internet, even though we're a little bit behind both of those communities. The intention has always been to have some shared staffing behind the scenes, so call center, NOC support, those types of things that can regionally be collaborative, where we can combine our resources and have better coverage for basically the same amount of budget that we would have spent on our own. You know, we would need, you know, we get 15 people for the price of 5 type of thing by combining our resources type of scenario. So we have continued those conversations. We meet with them every other week with Estes and Fort Collins. Longmont does participate from time to time, but they're a slightly different place within their build out, and so they're waiting to see how that partnership coalesces between the three communities here. But it's going well, and we're moving along with an IGA. We've had a couple of iterations between staff about terms and how the details get put together, and we're hoping to have that be brought forward before the end of the year. But just, I know that's a continued conversation topic, so just wanted to make sure that you guys knew that we were working on it. All right. You have any questions about that item?
Community perspective-wise, would people may want to clarify that this doesn't mean any less jobs in Loveland, you know, mm-hmm. outsourced to, you know, one of the other cities or something. So that might be something to make sure you're addressing.
That's actually a really good point, and it's something that we're very cognizant of. We really want this to be a partnership and not a services from Fort Collins, for instance. And most of the jobs will still be with the city. This is just a way of us being able to have 24/7 coverage faster between the three. None of us can really do that easily by ourselves. So this is a great opportunity. That's a point well taken, though, because that certainly could be a bad perception if it's not handled correctly.
Okay, any other questions on the IGA? All right. John, I think we're to the council reports.
Well, I gave you part of what I wanted to tell you about with the House and Companion Senate bills that you'll be seeing probably in the news because they are heavily supported by the D side of the Washington machine. And one of the things that's been asked and mentioned is that people with ITC work on the R's on the Commerce Committee, which Senator Gardner
is one of the leads on the Senate Commerce Committee to get some R's on that side so that the bill can actually see the floor. Because right now, I think from the Senate side, with six D sponsors, it'll never see the floor. So it's important that we get that moving along, because, you know, I'm thoroughly in the belief that the FCC overstepped. And while using our right-of-ways is going to be a necessity in the future for 5G, the cities need to be treated fairly. The counties need to be treated fairly. Not just, okay, we're going to take your property and we're not going to give you anything for it other than $270 for a pole attachment. And the fact that we have changed our pole attachment rules, the fact that we've changed our sourcing rules, the fact that we've come, the department through with Brianna and the others have come up with, you know, pole usage and multi-tenanting rules and things like that, we're quite a ways ahead of the curve. I've sent that out to cities all over the country, what we did here, and they're like, well, how did you get that done so fast? And it's because our staff jumped right, saw the problem, jumped right in the middle of it, wrote the code, and brought it to council. And council looked over at me and said, what are we doing? And I said, this is what we need to do. And that was that. And it's not to say that what we put in place is perfect, because it certainly won't be. You know, things in this arena change too fast. But what it does is, rather than letting anybody come in here and steamroll over our applications process, it drives them to the bargaining table. And that was really my intent all along, was to make them come to the bargaining table. That way our staff, based on what they know of our city and what they think needs to be done and what they know needs to be done, can bargain with these people and come up with a good solution for the citizens of Loveland. So another one that you're going to see coming down the pike, that's going to get pushed through the House and probably pushed through the Senate too, is the cable, what's the name of that? I sent it to you too. It's the cable broadband rules change, okay? Right now we have
PEG channels.
Right now the situation exists where the cable companies pay us a franchise fee for the use of our right-of-ways to all the different places they go in the city limits of Loveland. For years and years, this has worked very well. And part of that negotiation has always been that we negotiate into that deal some public access, public educational and government PEG channels on the cable boxes. You've seen it if you've watched City Council on Channel 16. Is R2J on 17, or is it, I don't know where they're at, but they have a channel too. So we've negotiated so that R2J gets a channel. And we actually have a couple others that we have rights to that we don't use. But what has happened is those have been negotiated into deals. Well, now the cable companies in mass across the country have come back to the FCC and said, hey, that's not fair, because we were, you know, boxed into this corner. I don't know what all the arguments were, and I really don't care. But what they have won with the FCC is the right to charge for the usage of those channels. So while their fees are set as far as what they will pay to the city based on whatever the contractual relationships were, now they're going to be able to come and back bill for those PEG channels. So that will sit. I think we get like $1 million a year or something similar. Is that right, Steve?
So about 800?
800,000. We get about 800,000 a year in franchise fees from Comcast, and that's going to get seriously eaten into because they're going to back bill us now, courtesy of the FCC running a new bill through Congress. They're going to be able to back bill us for all the costs related to the PEG channels and all the other services and freebies and favors and everything else they provide for us. So Steve and I talked a couple, 3 years ago when this fiasco started, and I encouraged the city manager and his assistant to take that out of the budget, because we all kind of knew that was going to get chewed into, and that's going to be true. So you're going to see that because, well, in Loveland, it's $800,000. Okay, in Denver, it's $6.5 million. And so there's going to be a lot of stink about it. So just know that that's what it is. it's the PEG channels, public, education, and governmental channels. So there's a few other little nuances in that bill, but they're not really that significant, so I won't go into them. So other than that, that's all I have.
Vision Manager's report.
So we have a couple of announcements. So we received our bids back. I'm going to start with that. So that, as you remember, we had to cut ties with Bear Communications and go back out to RFP. That RFP closed last week. We had 5 bidders. So we included that in the write-up. We are still evaluating the bids right now. So we'll be going through that and doing, we're grading them right now, and we'll be starting their interviews with the success that, you know, with our highest score bidders starting hopefully in the next week or two. So we're right on schedule with that. So we'll know more as we get into those bids and the details with the interviews. So that's moving forward. Lindsay went down to Denver and received another couple of awards on behalf of our utilities. So that was really exciting. It was the 3CMA, which is County Cities Marketing Association, 3CMA. I forget what it is. The 3 C's.
City County Communications.
City County Communications. So C is the third C is communication. We received the top award for our size community. We actually beat out City of Fort Collins, which was pretty nice. I know. We were up for the same category of award, and we were the top award winner. And then we won an overall award, which was kind of a surprise to us. Which was the Diamond, so we won the Savvy Award, and then we received the Diamond Award for marketing communication process, which was pretty exciting, and I think Lindsay's already stepped out.
Can I interrupt you just a second?
Absolutely.
Steve, is at some point, would it be appropriate to let council see you give somebody some of these awards in chambers? Or congratulate them, or whatever
yes,
you feel is appropriate?
We were looking at announcing this in our Friday folder,
yep.
Also to... Somebody suggested to me to add a little more to the twist to mention that we were selected ahead of the Malcolm Baldrige.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. So it came in late. It came in late on Thursday, so that's why it didn't make it to the last Thursday or Friday memo. But it will make it into this one. So.
Okay, I'm not talking about the Friday memo.
Oh, I think you're talking about something when we do our proclamations. You know,
exactly.
In fact, I'm working on that right now. For the 17th, I don't know if we'll be ready to get the award in hand and some write-ups.
We do.
My objective is the more we keep the Pulse name and the logo and keep it on the forefront of council's thought processes, the better off we're going to be. So anytime you can toot your horn, please do. And if it gets to the point of ad nauseum, I'll be happy to raise the flag. But so far, it's not.
Well, it's been pretty impressive. We basically won in every category we've applied to, so that's pretty exciting.
Well,
we need a big award.
Right now you're telling one counselor about that.
I know.
You need to tell everybody in the room, all the counselors, and especially the reporter Herald person sitting there with nothing more to do than waste ink.
Well, we will definitely have some conversation about that, and I know that Dr. Kuhn had asked to do something with the... with the award for the Colette Award too, so
okay. There
was some conversation about that. And then I do want to thank Paul for his beautiful tabletop display. It was a great event on Monday, and we actually, as staff, we were so thankful. We got you a nice little card.
Thank you.
Picture.
Oh, that's awesome.
Behind the picture. That's it. Thank you very much. So.
Thank you.
Now, will that be the pulpit that. Everywhere you go
yes.
to speak? Okay.
Yep. Absolutely. It glows, too. I don't know
you
if you
have to,
that a
you
lot.
Have to get above it to see
yeah,
it
has,
all the lights.
Needs
yeah,
batteries.
We need to turn the lights out.
Yeah.
I don't know, John. I was thinking that it's a cigarette.
What's that?
No,
look
under
there. Hey, there it is.
Okay,
there
I'll slide the
other
way.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
He drilled every
it
single
took
little
a while
hole.
To put every lever through every draw.
I'll bet.
Yeah. That's going to say. How many holes are there?
There's got to be 100 holes.
Whatever, 10,000.
Very cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. We really appreciate it. It was a beautiful, beautiful tabletop display, and I'm not really sure how we didn't win, but. you know.
I think you went so far over the top. Nobody knew what category I put you in.
Yeah, we should have had more people there. I think that's how the different tables won.
Yeah, everybody voted for their own.
So CPAC was the winner with their little scales.
Because they had 10 people.
We had 8.
Well, you get all those pencil pushers and you give them free lunch. I mean, you're going to get them all. Huh.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
Free lunch.
No, but it's
free lunch gets them. Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for this. If we don't have any other agenda items,
maybe just one quick thing. I don't wish to talk about this so much as present as a topic for a conversation coming up. From what I understand, Connection just announced that they'd be chipping in $195,000 from their broadband funds to fund. I don't know if they have a name for it yet, but basically low income qualified service. I guess they're shooting for somewhere in the range of what Comcast Essentials is listed at, which I think is like $10 a month. I don't know if there's been any talks about that, but.
Yeah, we haven't really decided the best course of action for our community. There's a couple of different ways that we can approach that type of service need. One is offering a lifeline service just out of the gate. It may not be broadband level service, but it's something that's affordable across the board. There are programs that we can run, like what Fort Collins is talking about doing, where we can run that internally, but you have to manage who's qualified and who's not. And then, of course, you can also partner with another outside entity, such as the Housing Authority or low-income school programs, to be able to know who's qualified and who's not. And there's a lot of pros and cons with that. Corrine's actually been doing some investigation on that specifically, and we just don't have a staff recommendation on how we think we should proceed yet.
Oh, that's great. I'd love to hear what you guys think.
Well, with Comcast, it requires that they be participating in a federal program, right?
Yeah, I believe so. About qualification, I'm not.
Yeah, that's low-income housing and or food stamp.
Or free and reduced lunch.
Lunch. And that's something that we saw when we traveled around to some other different communities. They all had a slightly different way of approaching that. Some were more complicated and time-consuming for staff to manage, and others were not. And it's just one of the complaints that we hear a lot about some of the incumbents programs is that if you can fall out of qualification pretty easily. So if you have a late payment or delinquency, you're no longer qualified for that program, or if you've ever had an eviction or those types of things, and that can be a pretty common event for a low-income family, and we want to make sure that we are fully considering some of those requirements if we want to go down that road. So to make sure that it's actually something that's usable, and that's one of the complaints that we've heard when we did our surveys early on. Especially with the Comcast low-income program, is that even though they had it available, very few people actually were able to qualify for it and take advantage of it.
Keep working on it.
Yep. So we do have an RFP out right now for a marketing study to understand the market rates. That will hopefully kick off around the end of the year, beginning of the next year, as we get ready to launch. So we'll understand the market and some of these other options that go along with that. And Fort Collins did launch their service. Ralph, you were there. Bai was there. Thank you, Steve. they did their big launch on the 29th. Corrine, did you attend to as well?
Yes.
Do you want to talk about what you saw there?
Oh, it was well attended for sure. And Ryan was there, Lindsay and I, and Nicole, and Ryan Smith.
I was on vacation, so.
Yeah. So it was nice. They had many speakers and little hors d'oeuvres and whatnot.
Have they lit up some people?
They were actually signing up the very next day. I can't remember the date.
I think it was either the 30th.
And
they
did announce their price was $59.95 or $59.99 for 1 gigabyte, and they said that they were starting in the northern part of Fort Collins.
So is that an introductory price like Longmont did, or is that a permanent price?
I don't think so.
We don't know, but it didn't.
We don't know for sure, but they didn't say it was introductory or anything like that. They were saying that's what they were charging.
Okay.
So I'm not really clear.
I'd have to say that the most striking thing that I heard that night up in Fort Collins is that their next goal is 10 gigabit service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When I unplugged 4 years ago, the stretch goal was 3. Now it's 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this stuff is changing rapidly, to Richard's point.
So the network is definitely capable of that, and we have absolutely designed our network to be able to handle 10 gig in the not-too-distant future, which we think will be more than is needed for most residential customers, but it's certainly an option, and businesses will absolutely need that.
VR AR is coming. I mean, there are going to be some crazy applications in the next 5-10 years.
Yep.
Very high bandwidth, all 4K.
Well,
yeah.
It's nice.
And what would a high school do with a 10 gigabit connection?
A whole district's about to switch over to 10. We're in the process of it right now. And then the high schools will all be 2 gig. High schools, middle schools will be 2. Elementaries will be 1. And that's, you know, next year. The curve keeps going pretty linear, if not a little exponential. So a couple years out, wouldn't be surprising.
And as exciting as it was that Fort Collins launched their first customer a couple days ago, Estes beat them. So Estes has their first paying customers.
Dark horse.
Yep. It was 3 or 4 hours ahead of them.
Estes actually signed up a real customer.
They have a real paying customer.
What is their service even called? I've heard.
They haven't brand launched yet.
Oh, let's look it up and we'll get to that.
It's called Dave's House.
And their kickoff is the 25th.
Their kickoff is the 25th of Estes, so they're going to get their brand launch on the 25th. You know, they're doing it their own way of Estes.
They always have.
Yeah. So it's just very
exciting. They just run an Ethernet cord? Like, how does it even?
Oh no, they're building fiber to the home. They've been doing that since maybe last fall. So they started doing some trial project, and they changed their enterprise about the same time that we did, and they haven't written their business plan. They're still working on that. They're still working on their bonding, but they're doing this as a pilot. So as they have excess money in their electric utility, they're loaning that to their broadband side and, you know, doing it that way. So they're
probably worth noting that Estes Park's cable carrier. I had a customer up there, their cable carrier. They worked 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, period.
I think they're going to be very successful, though, up in Estes. They have a definite need, more so than
Front Range. Just their tourism outlets are going to be ecstatic to be able to get any kind of a broadband connectivity.
Yes.
They'll be really, then they can all say that they can actually take credit cards.
Yes.
Seriously, that'd be a good thing.
Yeah.
That's all I have.
Does Steve have
some items?
Brianna, did you want to say the last piece of the Fort Collins approach, which is there's no speeds per gig?
That's true. There is no speeds per gig. So, well, they do have 2 price points. So one is their lowest price point is gig speed, and then they have a 10 gig package as well in the residential. And they have not announced prices on or speed levels on their commercial. I don't think they've launched that officially yet. So, yeah. But Steve, do you have anything more? Oh, Dave,
I have one really quick thing. So my wife told me that she was talking to a community member who apparently thought was getting Pulse and played with Bryce broadband. I don't know what to do with that information exactly or how to counteract it, but I just want to give you that data point. I think our branding is pretty good, so that was a confusing thing, but apparently that happened. So.
Interesting.
Well,
we really haven't launched a thorough marketing, because we don't have services to offer. We're just trying to make sure we get our name out there, but
sure.
That's helpful.
So just let
you know.
Otherwise.
Probably worth mentioning, and this is from insider information only, but Rise Broadband just laid off their senior management people, including people that own stock. So take that for whatever it's worth.
And then also, what hit the news, Comcast is going to be closing their local call center as well. Did you see that?
The Fort Collins one? That doesn't surprise me.
That did come across this morning on the news.
I didn't see
well.
That,
yeah.
So.
They said they're not going to be renewing the lease at the end of the year.
They had to notify the state of Colorado about that last one. I did see
well,
that.
None of the calls from here go there anyway.
Well,
it's all tier two off the East Coast.
Yeah, but with the number of jobs that are involved, they had to provide notice to the State Department of Labor.
Oh, I see.
So that was one of those public announcements that didn't come out.
How many people does that involve? Anybody know?
It's 90.
I thought they stated in the paper it was 600.
I thought it was like 600.
Well, the threshold, I think, is greater than 90. They have to notify
State of Colorado.
Yeah.
I had heard the 600, too. Well,
we're not going to have as many people cleaning up the trails.
You don't need quite that many for your call center, I don't think.
No. Although we are going to be hiring some additional CSRs starting in a few weeks. Not exactly sure the timing of when those will post, but we've had a couple of city council items go. First reading was last week. Next reading is next week to transfer the budget from Pulse into utility billing, because that's part of general fund, in order to accommodate hiring in that department. So that is the budget. It's a net neutral across the board because it's going from one bucket to the other so that we can hire in the right place, but that is taking place as well. So we are hiring CSRs. Yeah,
well, anytime you're in front of council, just be sure and remind them that you are a separate utility enterprise, the same as the electric department.
We are the electric department.
I know you are. But there are some people on council that seem to be confused on that even after 4 years of study. So bring it up as often as you can.
Good enough. Good to know. Thank you.
All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Second.
Okay. All right. All in favor?
Okay.
We are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.